Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
This week, we are going to review the new Netflix film, The Lovebirds. Before we do that, there's some big streaming news to touch on, which we've alluded to over the weeks, but at least should acknowledge that HBO Max has launched, at least for those of us in the United States. I downloaded it, played with it a little bit. Jordan, have you tried it out?
No. How much money is it again?
Well, do you have HBO?
Yeah.
It's no additional cost. If you have HBO now, the next time you update the app, it'll become HBO Max.
What if I have HBO as part of my cable subscription and also HBO Go?
Then I don't think it'll automatically update. I think you then have to basically log into the HBO Max website using your cable login.
Yeah, I should check it out, I guess. I mean, the thing with me and HBO Max is that, from what I can tell, the non-HBO shows that they got, I own, that I would care about. So I own all of Big Bang Theory, and I own all of Friends. And I have access to the full HBO library, so...
What about the Max?
Yeah, I guess I want to see Anna Kendrick and...
Love Life?
Is that what it's called?
Oh, is that one of the originals? I actually didn't know what the Max meant.
I mean, it's been all over my Twitter. They must know how I feel about Anna Kendrick, because my Twitter for the last, like, 7 days has been like, Anna Kendrick and Love Life! Anna Kendrick and Love Life! You really want to see this? You really, really, really want to see this? Check it out, HBO Max, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I think they're also just advertising very heavily right now.
No, it's me, Anthony. It's me and Anna.
Oh, of course.
They're not advertising to me, but...
Our intrinsic tie.
Can't pay for it or have it, so that makes sense.
Do you feel left out, Daryl? Do you want some more promoted tweets from Twitter? Because I can call Twitter and see if
I get plenty of those.
Promote some tweets at you.
For HBO Max, but lots of those.
Yeah. I've been noticing a lot of video games, not like your standard like console video games, but like web-based computer games also on my Twitter feed. I don't know what I did. Like, I don't know what they think they know about me, because I didn't download any new games or anything. I mean, I think I looked in the App Store at the game section one time, but I didn't make any actions. But suddenly they're like, check out this new World War III game. Like, check out this game where you shoot the zombies.
Is it Apple Arcade? Because they must have spent a lot, because they appear frequently in mine.
Mm-mm. It's not Apple Arcade. It's like separate from that.
I'm still scarred by, I think it was I can't remember if it was a Facebook or Twitter ad, but a social media ad that I saw like 6 months ago that said the perfect game for players over 40.
And oh God.
I felt.
What does that even involve?
My like, you know, entire body falling apart and graying and withering and dying. It was awesome. I don't remember the game. I will never play that game. Even when I'm 60.
I would have been too curious to figure out what the fuck over 40s want in a game.
I mean, to be fair, I think my taste is probably similar in that I don't want a game that's too hard. I don't want a game that's too stressful. I just want something low commitment and fun.
So like Sudoku? Like that's what over 40s want? Just Sudoku?
I'm playing Sneaky Sasquatch right now, and that's pretty close to my sweet spot.
Is it a stealth game? Sounds like a stealth game.
There's a little bit of stealth, but it's mostly like mini games, like because you can put on a disguise and then you can become like a race car driver or a like you know race people on the ski slopes. And apparently they recently added the whole thing where you can get a job at a corporate office, which I don't know why you'd want to do that in a game. But anyway, Apple Arcade game, really fun. Good times. I bring up HBO Max partly because I've definitely been getting some texts from people just asking, what the hell is this and how is it different from HBO? And I do think that... So I think the content actually is relatively good, although a lot of that is just because HBO has very good shows. So this is just like a continuation of that. It also has like stuff from Turner Classic Movies. It has Doctor Who. It has the Studio Ghibli library, so all of Hayao Miyazaki's films. So there's a lot of good stuff in there. But I think the branding and rollout has been super confusing, where Hey, I just think if you grab somebody on the street and said, how's HBO Max different from HBO? They'd be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, none of this makes any sense to me. And
yeah.
Then on top of that, they launched not on Fire TV or Roku, which are the two most popular streaming TV platforms. And they basically, I thought it was just like somebody on the technical team had fucked up and the apps just weren't ready or approved.
They didn't flip the switch.
Yeah. But it turns out there's like some sort of business negotiation that's gone wrong. And like they've said, oh, we just haven't reached a deal. I think Amazon in particular is mad because of they haven't like reached a deal on how HBO Max would get offered on Prime Video channels versus right now they're just selling regular HBO. And
right.
I think until until they reach a deal on that, they're not going to bother bringing Max to Fire TVs.
That's unfortunate. I did feel like overall, it seemed like it was a launch that kind of either that both snuck up on me and then almost went like unnoticed. But I'm in the wrong market for it. Like they shouldn't be directing any of their attention at, like trying to get the attention of Canadians because we can't pay any money for it. But also like maybe it was the circumstances. Maybe it's just like there's other stuff going on. There's a lot of big news this week, so it got kind of buried. But it felt a lot more lackluster than a lot of the other streaming service launches. Even like, you know, I feel like there was more fanfare around the Quibi launch than there was around this one. So I don't know if that is, if you had that impression as well, or what you thought about it.
I mean, I feel like there was a lot of fanfare just because in the sense of advertising and people like being like, what the heck is this? Like there's that moment where it sort of like moves from a thing that we pay attention to at TechCrunch to something that, you know, the broader population cares about. And I feel like it did kind of reach that moment where there was a lot of people just like, what is this? Why is this? Mm-hmm. What's going on? But I agree that it didn't seem to have like, I mean, that I guess the sort of gold standard is like that, the Disney Plus launch, not the gold standard in terms of like technical aspects, because they also had uptime issues, but in terms of like everybody was talking about it, you know, they got like millions of downloads on the first day, and this was not that. I mean, I wrote a story about how there were numbers from Sensor Tower saying that they got 87,000 new users across Apple and Google on the first day, which is not a lot. It's less than Quibi, but part of it is because they're not counting all the people who probably, you know, just updated their app from HBO right. Now to HBO Max. So it's so from an app perspective, it's not a new app launch. It's just like an update. So in that sense, maybe it's not surprising that it didn't make as big a splash. But I'm curious how all the Warner Media executives are feeling in their offices right now. If they feel like this, or I guess at home, but like whether they're feeling like this is a successful launch or not. It seems like it hasn't. It hasn't made a huge splash.
Yeah, but I guess I didn't really take into account the fact that they were just converting over the HBO Now, because maybe that was by design then, if they were like, well, we have a huge legacy built-in user base that we just get to convert over, so let's save some of our powder on the marketing spend until we have more new original content or something to like push, but I don't know.
I will say that my girlfriend, who does not generally get into the weeds with this stuff as we do, when I mentioned that I was writing an article about HBO Max this week, she said, oh, is that the service with Friends? I've just been seeing all these ads saying HBO Max has Friends. And so as a result of that, I did finally watch two episodes of Friends, which seems fine. Seems like a perfectly fine show.
No. That's incorrect. That show is bad, but I don't want to get into it.
Okay.
What show's bad?
Friends.
Oh, what do you know? I mean, to be fair, it hasn't always aged well, but it's a classic. Come on.
Remember when Ross somehow owned a monkey, which is like definitely against all the laws and cruel.
I don't know if realism was the selling point.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I watched it a lot when I was younger. I have no desire to watch it again. But
you just are full of opinions.
I'm full of opinions. I also hate the past. I always want the past to die, and I want to bury it.
Do you still hate the past with the way things are going? Because it feels like things are just getting worse.
I just
past is looking pretty good lately.
Hating the past isn't about past being good or bad. Hating the past is about we are inevitably on this one track that goes forward. So why not hate the past? Because there's no benefit to getting sentimental about it.
You're like a robot. We should launch you into space. But also, it's kind of like Logan Roy on Succession when he's like, the past is not real. Future's real. I sound kind of like him, right?
Yeah, that was good. That was a good impression.
They just brought it all flooding back. Okay, so well, let's talk about The Lovebirds then, which is, as I mentioned, on Netflix. It was originally going to be released in theaters, but because of the world around us, that was canceled, and then Paramount, which was the studio behind it, sold the rights to Netflix. It stars Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae. It's directed by Michael Showalter, who directed The Big Sick. So for those reasons, I had pretty high expectations that I'm like big fans of the actors. I loved The Big Sick. It was probably one of my favorite movies of the last few years. So I was pretty excited about it. What about you guys?
Yeah, I was also excited about it for many of those same reasons. I didn't realize that Michael Showalter directed The Big Sick for some reason. I knew that he was the director or main creator behind like Wet Hot American Summer, but and then I knew a lot of his other smaller projects that he was involved in.
Comedy career. I don't want to like reduce him down to one movie, but I mean that's sort of his like most recent big success.
No,
one that meant a lot to me.
I'm just saying it would have set my expectations even higher if I realized that he had directed that too. So
wait, what did he direct that was a big deal? I'm sorry. I'm really trying to listen to you guys. I'm even looking at you, but I still can't pay attention to what you're saying. What?
The Big Sick.
Michael Showalter. Oh, he did do The Big Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So in some ways, this is like the follow-up to the Big Sick since it's him and Kumail Nanjiani.
It's not really, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, that's my overall impression of it is that it doesn't really feel like a follow-up to that movie. Like, I wouldn't say it's anywhere near as good as that movie.
Yeah, same.
This feels like a movie where they liked that one with the guy, with Michael from Arrested Development. Date
Sarah?
Night. What's it called?
Superbad?
No. Not that one. Not George Michael. Michael. The one where they like have a date.
Juno?
And then they like end up in like a spy thriller or something.
Oh, Game Night with Jason Bateman.
Yeah, which everybody loves, apparently.
That wasn't Michael Sarah. Oh, you mean Michael?
Yeah, yeah,
from
yeah.
The Office. Scott Carell.
No.
Steve Carell. Well, oh, my God.
He might be in it,
what do
too,
we know?
But I mean Jason Bateman, yeah. Who's
Oh, who Jason is, Bateman. Yeah.
There's been this whole like weird subgenre of like couples, mid-relationship couples getting into criminal hijinks.
Yeah, because
there's
game night, and then there's
date night. Yes. Yeah, okay. Whoa. Yes, exactly.
So this feels like in that genre, I guess, but
I'm not a fan of that genre. Are you?
I haven't seen those movies, and now I've seen this one, and based only on this one, I'm not a fan of that genre.
So I saw Game Night. I couldn't even bring myself to see Date Night, which is crazy because Tina Fey and Steve Carell are like way up on the top of my list of like, I'll watch whatever they do. But I couldn't even bring myself to because the trailer looks so terrible.
Right.
And then I definitely watched Game Night like accidentally. Like it felt like a Maria request or something. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And that was not pleasant either. And then I was excited when I saw, oh, Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae, like, this is going to be banging. And then I watched the trailer and was like, oh, this isn't going to be so banging.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly how I felt about it. And I didn't know that it was this until I, like, looked at the description. I had only heard it described as a romantic comedy prior to
which I was so down for. Like, same. We are in need of good rom-coms. Mm-hmm. Like, just a standard, solid, make you laugh, pull on those heartstrings a little bit, finish with a kiss, call it a day.
Especially like, rom-coms about adults, because I feel like there's like been like a mini renaissance of high school rom-coms.
Teeny bopper. Yeah.
Yeah. And this definitely had really good moments and had like nice romance moments and good funny parts too, but it also had a lot of like
just, stupid hijinks.
Yeah, hijinks that made you feel like they were chores to get through, basically.
But like on the redemptive side of that, like Kumail Nanjiani is amazing. Like, love him. It's hard not to. And like Issa Rae, when she smiles, I smile.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the rule. Like, something about her is so infectious. Like, her, when she's happy, I'm happy. And like, I don't know, she's amazing. So like, cast wise, and even like some of the like, what's the girl who was in True Blood and plays the blonde lady? Like, she's great. I love watching her on screen.
Anna Camp.
Yeah. And the guy who's the bad guy as well, Blondie, like, Paul he's Sparks, fun too.
From our other recent feature on original content. Yeah, Waco.
What was... Oh, yeah, he was in Waco. Yeah, see, I knew him. I like him. So the cast was really good, and they did a great job with what they had, but, like, what they had wasn't good enough for them.
Yeah, I would agree.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think there were some good jokes, and on the whole, I had definitely had this experience of watching it. I watched it about almost exactly a week ago, and I laughed my ass off the whole time and had a really good time watching it.
Were you drunk?
And a week later, I mean, it was a Friday night. I was probably 100% sober. But like a week later, I couldn't tell you, like, you know, I could, like, almost none of it has made a lasting impression. Like, I will be able to describe the plot because I have the Wikipedia page open in front of me. But if I didn't, I would just be like, who knows?
So
like,
I watched it this morning, and I feel the same way.
Yeah, I watched it last night, so it should be pretty fresh, but agree.
Like, can you remember your favorite joke, though? Like, I remember while I was watching, I was like, oh, I could reference that joke because that was funny. But here we are, like, 7 hours later, and I don't...
No, and I think, I mean, the... what I remember more are opportunities where I felt like they left jokes on the table, which was unfortunate, especially around Sparks. Like, I really felt like he wanted or was able to do more than they gave him. Like, the character just fell a bit flat for me, and there were some parts where it was like, oh, this could be a really funny exchange, and then they just didn't do anything with it, and it was like, what, did you just give up? Like, what happened here? Like, there was a bit of that in retrospect where I felt like I don't know what the post-production process was, but it felt like maybe they just were like, well, let's just get this thing out the door because the deadline's passed or something. Like, it really felt like it had a lot more investment from everybody earlier on in the movie, and then it just kind of tapered off to over the course of it. But
I mean, I do think that there's an element of once you combine a sort of crime plot with comedy, I feel like in general what can happen is the crime stuff kind of takes over at the end, and that's never really what you care about in these movies, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's usually the characters and the jokes, but what happens is mostly that it's, you know, resolving the plot, which you don't care about. And so I feel like even if there's not necessarily everyone sort of consciously being like, all right, like, you know, we ran out of time or money or whatever, I think you can still have, like, a lot of movies that sort of end in that kind of lackluster
way. Right, because you're like, oh, we have to resolve this. We put this thing in as the driver, like this crime plot, and now we have to resolve it, even though nobody gives a shit about that because it's actually a character story, right? Like, that's really what the problem is, because if I think about the parts that I really enjoyed, and now I can think of some, like, I liked... I forget what his name was, but like her colleague who had the Cat Williams impressions, and
oh yeah,
like he was super jealous of him.
Was it Keith?
Keith.
I think his name was Keith.
Like, those are a lot of good funny interactions, and I liked more the tension between Kumail Nanjiani and the Keith character than I cared about any of the crime plot that was going on. And then they were like, well, we have to advance the crime plot because we introduced it. And it's like, well, why did you do that? Like, now we're on these rails, and I just don't want to be. Like, I'd rather be in their relationship because that's much more interesting.
And I mean, so I guess we should at least talk a little bit about what that plot is. So it sort of starts with these two characters, Gibran and Leilani, on what looks like their first date, and they're, you know, everything's great. And then very quickly you fast forward to 4 years in, where things are less great, and in fact, like, it looks like the relationship may be reaching its end, but before there's any resolution there, they are essentially hijacked by someone claiming to be a police officer. They're driving to a party at the time, and he takes over the car and ends up murdering a bicyclist with the car, which then they assume that they're going to be, or actually the witnesses, they're basically like, oh, you killed this man. And so they flee the scene, and the rest of the movie is them trying to both solve the crime and resolve their relationship issues.
Yes.
Through the crime solving.
Yeah, the crime,
like,
is
they don't
what...
make a specific effort to repair their relationship mm-hmm. during this. No. But their teamwork and chemistry in doing so reminds them why they fell in love to begin with.
Yeah, and the multiple deaths along the way. That's what
it is, just pretty violent movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I was pretty bothered by the bacon grease.
Yeah, that was... it was also a horrible VFX, so that bothered me. And then also just the idea of it bothered me. So it bothered me on two fronts.
The VFX bothered me too, but not quite as much just mentally as the bacon grease.
Yeah.
I had not been, I guess, as bothered because I had, in the trailer, they kind of showcased that scene. And so I kind of knew how it was going to be resolved. But it was, yeah, I mean, it's like definitely a thing where you're like, if you spend a second thinking about it in any kind of realistic context, you're like, oh, he's dead. He's died in like a really brutal way.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I have a hard stop in 15 minutes and I don't want to rush us, but I would like to get to spoilers because I don't know if I paid close enough attention, and I want you guys to tell me like what was happening on the bad guy side, because I'm not sure I followed that carefully. So like, are there things we want to say before spoilers?
No, I think we expressed our opinion about this movie.
Yeah, I guess I would add that I do think that part of the reason I did enjoy it while I was watching it is because I do, like, especially Camille and Issa are just amazingly charismatic performers, and they have great chemistry together. And so I was just happy to watch them doing anything. I agree that the script did not give them enough to do. And I'm also disappointed that, looking back, I couldn't really describe either of their characters in any detail either. But I think as performers, I'm 100% like they did a great job.
Yeah, and I'm willing to go far enough to say that, like, I think I bet a bunch of their lines and their interplay was probably improvised, and that's why it was so good. So
I agree. I mean, we don't know for sure, but I would not be surprised by that. I will say, like, before we jump into spoilers, that this is a movie that I would recommend you add to your list but not watch. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, one that you could have in your back pocket.
It's a rainy day movie, but don't
prioritize. Yeah, it's a rainy day movie. So, like, don't go, like, I'm not saying, like, run, watch it right now unless you're really excited about it. But, like, it's fine to add it to your list so that, like, a year from now when you're like, I've quit Netflix, I've finished it, I've seen everything, you're like, oh, wait, I have this random movie on my list. And you go watch it then.
I think that is good advice. So... let's move into spoilers. So if you have not seen All of the Lovebirds and don't want to know what happens, you should stop listening now. Jordan, what questions do you have for
Sure.
us?
So I'm just going to go ahead and run through the plot as I saw it, kind of half paying attention, and then you can tell me what I'm missing. So True Blood Girl is the wife of a congressman?
Yes, or a senator, but something, yeah.
Something. Some guy. Some big shot. And police officer Sparks is a corrupt police officer.
Correct.
And he and Congressman and Lady Trueblood were part of a sex cult.
Yes.
Yes. Which may have maybe doing other secret society things too, but it's definitely a sex cult.
Also sex, but probably other power things.
Yeah, it's not just about the sex. That's just a part of the...
Right, that's the fun part. Mm-hmm.
Of the allure, yeah. So, Crooked Cop was there to protect Sex Cult from police intervention. And he had a partner who was bicyclist guy who was taking money from him. So I guess the part that I'm a little bit confused by is where the frat boys come into play.
Or the bike guy hired them to essentially be like manual labor for his extortion business.
So like they were essentially, they had like dick pics and they were like, go into more detail, elaborate.
I don't know that they did anything particularly useful beyond just like stuffing envelopes and like doing the actual logistics of the extortion operation.
But to whom?
The various
who were they extorting?
Powerful people. Yeah, the secret society. Like that was the supply side of the operation. It was like that guy was protecting them because he's a cop, but he was also getting all of the dirt to blackmail them with. Because he has access. So he could
keep getting money from them.
Yeah.
To protect them.
Yeah.
So it's not like a straight up deal where you're like, you protect us, we'll pay you. It was more like...
It was that, but then he had a side business that was also like, and I'll extort you because I have access to these pictures of you guys fucking and stuff.
A little bonus.
Yeah. And he was using the bicycle guy as like the vehicle for his extortion. Yeah,
he was a silent partner. The bicycle
guy betrayed him.
Yeah.
Right.
The bicycle guy started taking more than his fair share of the cut, according to the police officer's feelings about the matter.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, pretty thin, plot-wise.
Yeah.
I think we've now spent as much time as they spend explaining it.
Yeah.
Like, they do not
care. No, they were just like, we need to tie this off, and this is the easiest way to do that, and let's get out of here.
I like the sex cult, though. The sex cult was
fun. Yeah, that was fun. Especially
you
the
would,
like.
Anthony.
I liked the reveal mechanism where they were like, okay, everybody take off their masks, and they were the only ones who did. I thought that was pretty funny. Also, I liked the main sex cult announcer guy's super weird voice and accent, where I was like,
yeah. He was like, 44. I also liked that they were like chanting their little chant, and Kumail and Issa were like, we could do this, like, Sanctorium, we are one. And then they kept going when they shouldn't have. That was pretty funny, too.
Yeah, that's good. But they did have smaller masks. I was like, why are their masks so small? Because theirs were smaller. And the real reason
everybody
is...
Everybody else had, like, a full face covering.
Yeah. The real reason is they're the lead actors in a movie, so we need to see more of their faces. But the... Tara came up with a good fictional.
And in the group shots, they want you to be able to see.
Yeah,
this is where they're sitting.
Tara's fictional reason was they didn't. They're the only ones who didn't bring their own masks from home.
That's what Yeah, of course. Tara's right.
Yeah.
Tara's totally right. They didn't bring their own masks. They were newcomers, and so they got standard issue guest masks.
Yeah.
Whereas everybody else was like, "Oh, I already like put in my deposit to get my like."
Custom
full-fledged premium
plague doctor sex cult mask,
yeah, like full face coverage. No one's ever gonna find out who I am unless they recognize my watch, which was custom made,
right?
Which wasn't part of the plot, but I thought about it all the time. It's like you're not really all that, like your face.
Oh, they all know
the only way people identify you,
and these sex cults, they all know who they are. It's just about
they all know
plausible deniability.
It's just in case someone whips out a camera.
Yeah.
I will say the scene that actually did get a little bit under my skin was not the bacon grease part, but like just the part where Paul Sparks comes in and he just starts shooting all the college students. And like what had been like this really, really comedic scene suddenly just gets really violent. And I felt like my laughter just like died in my mouth immediately.
I saw him kill one person.
It's sort of happening in the background.
Yeah.
And so you can tell what's happening, although I don't know you definitely see one person get shot. I don't know if he's the only one. But
he says later, I killed a bunch of people or something.
Were we happy with the resolution of the relationship plot?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of how it had to happen, right? I mean.
Yeah.
I also didn't think their relationship was that bad. I was kind of on team friends when they went over to the friend's house and... She was like, y'all's relationship is so good. And she was like, no, it's not. And she was like, but you guys never fight. And she's like, we fight all the time. And she's like, but you have sex so much. She's like, well, not really. And like when they were fighting, when we went to like 4 years later and they were like kind of fighting and yelling at each other. And he like really wanted to like plan kinky sex. And she was like, kinky sex is never planned. I was like, that just feels very like standard.
Right.
For a four-year relationship, like I don't.
Yeah, I thought it was like very much like they were like still a charming couple who are bickering, And then suddenly they're just like, oh, we got to break up.
Yeah, it was weird.
Like, if they had... what was their fight about again? It was pretty dumb.
There were, like, several pieces of it. That's the other thing. It wasn't, like, one big fight where it was, like,
but the main thing they started with was, like, so stupid and mundane, and I think that was the point. But, like, the problem was...
How they would perform... How they would do...
On Amazing Race, right.
Like, oh,
yeah. Because that was the callback at the end, yeah. I think that could have been more effective if they didn't play it for laughs so much, like, because that can be a true thing where you're like, oh yeah, that is a real problem if they get real acid and like cruel to each other as a result of it. And I don't think they necessarily I mean, they kind of built to that, because that was the whole thing. I don't even remember what it was. Again, this is part of the problem of the whole movie, but like, they did get to a point where somebody said something that was like clearly a low blow, and then the other person replied with an equally low blow. So that was kind of the impact they were going for, but I still don't know that they pulled it off, because I kind of feel like the same as both of you. And maybe that's the whole movie. It was like getting them to realize the same thing, that it's like, this is just kind of how relationships go, and there's still a lot there. You just have to like work harder to find it maybe or whatever, but like, It wasn't a great arc, because it didn't feel like it had any significant... It felt like nothing changed except for what the plot called for in terms of their opinion about it, right?
Yeah, like it didn't do a good job. Because like, I think the whole lesson was like, if you just open up to each other about what you're actually thinking about, like not the little like surface level bickering, but like what you're actually... Because like... He never wanted to show her his documentary, right? And she was like, you don't care what I think at all. Like, you never want to. And he's like, no, I care so much. And like, it's just like a classic miscommunication. And like, how many seeds of fights were planted from that core little kernel of things? And like, I think it's easy when you bicker so much to stop truly communicating about the important stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, and then they figured that out and everything was hunky-dory. So it's like, but the plot and the script don't like get you there. Like, you have to actually do some observational surgery to be like, who are these characters and what do they actually stand for? And then like, what's their core problem? And like, how did they actually solve it? It's not like very clear.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not even a clarity issue. It just feels like you're having to fill in all that stuff yourself. Like, you're making up the more interesting version of the story or projecting your own relationship stuff into it, because it's just so sketchy.
Yeah. You should have had me on set, clearly.
Yeah.
Next time, once filming begins again. Do we have any final thoughts about the Lovebirds?
No, I think we got to it with the non-spoilers. Like... Definitely, you know, I think a theatrical release for this movie would have been a very bad thing, unfortunately. Like, I think it would have gotten killed in theaters. I think it's great for it that it landed on Netflix, because it's like mediocre, but it's like, it's again, a totally fine like rainy day watch, but it's not something that I would ever recommend somebody pay to go see in theaters.
It actually feels like a step above most of Netflix's like B+ movies that we've been talking about for the last year and a half. It's not like one of Netflix's like prestige films, right? But like,
yeah,
it is either right in the same heat or in a better heat than like, you know, most of Netflix's kind of like B+ bullshit.
For some reason, when you said that, I thought of Red Sea Diving Resort, which to me is like
it's like a solid C-.
B, yeah.
I did like not like that
Netflix
one.
Movie.
I did not like that one at all. But I'm thinking like, these aren't in the same genre, but like Seven Underground, or what's that one we watched with the kid who gets abducted? Was it Ryan Reynolds?
Oh, Extraction.
Oh, yeah.
Those are B+ movies. Or what was the other one where they were... soldiers and they went in to go get the money out of the walls, and then
I know what
That's what I'm saying. All these forgettable films.
I know which one you're talking about.
Right. All these talented people making not very good movies that they will not be remembered.
Yeah. Exactly.
People will not highlight in their filmography.
Well, that's always existed. It was like just the directed to TV thing. But I feel like with the Netflix angle, like there's a bit more hype behind it just because Netflix wants to, is more, like the directed to TV, it was essentially people just like, let's bury this effort. Like we all know this isn't that worthwhile, but like, maybe we'll make up its budget in blockbuster sales or whatever. Whereas Netflix is like, this is a big deal. Like we got these big actors, and then the movie doesn't merit that hype.
Like you should have gotten those big writers too.
Yeah.
You should have, and maybe like had a little bit more time working on the script rather than just being like, this is great. You got some stars. Let's film it.
It's one of those things where you're like, well, maybe the studio model is good in some ways because they do have some intervention, right? Like, maybe that's not all just quashing people's fucking artistic freedoms. Maybe some of it is like actually improving the quality of shit, right?
Yeah, totally. Because sometimes
a lot of this stuff feels very first draft.
Yeah. I sometimes feel like Netflix is just like, okay, A-list actor and like A-list actress and like mediocre script and like cool location and like this camera. Movie, we did it, you know? And it's like, you can't, you know what I mean? It's like cooking. It's not baking. It's not like, you can't just plug in the right amounts of this or that and make, you know, bake it at the right temp and it'll come out perfect. It's cooking. You got to like taste it, add butter, add salt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You like that metaphor, by the way?
That's good.
That was good. That was very good. That's very good. Okay. All right, let's end it there then. So I'll just remind people, you can always email us. Let us know what you thought of The Lovebirds at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. We always appreciate it if you subscribe and leave us a positive review in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. Everyone have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Happy weekend.